Wait, did you hear?
No.
We're diving into the juiciest celebrity profiles of all time.
I'm Beatrice Hazelhurst.
And I'm Ivana Ryder.
This is Uncover Girl.
I feel like so many people haven't clicked this episode.
Yeah, if you're here,
hi.
Welcome aboard. It's going to be a bumpy ride.
It's going to be educational.
Yeah, absolutely. And fascinating, frankly. I don't know why everyone isn't talking about the profile that we're doing today, this week.
Yeah, if just one Democrat read it, I think maybe things might have gone differently.
We would have known a little bit more, at least.
We would have known a little bit more context, maybe some more information to, you know, draw upon in a debate.
Yeah.
I don't know.
To chew on.
Yeah. And I understand, like, this is coming a week post-election. Exactly.
Exactly.
And, you know, you're sick of it. We're totally exhausted by all the coverage at this point. But we've chosen this subject specifically because we want to kind of contextualize who this person is and how he's maintained such a chokehold on the American public, so much of the American public. And I think with any star that we choose, we're like drawn to wanting to cover them. It sometimes feels totally instinctive. Sometimes they're literally just in the news cycle and we can't avoid them. In this case, it's both.
Yeah.
But today it's Donald Trump.
It's Donald Trump.
And because of that, and because of him, we don't really have inspirations.
No, no. And it's funny. It does feel like we're sort of wrestling here inherently, because I think we've been aware the whole time, day one, that while we are taking pop culture seriously, this is not what we'd call a serious listen. We're not sort of an NPR style political breakdown show. And we're aware of that. But you and I are intelligent women with thoughts. You and I talk about this in our private lives.
We like to believe we are.
We hope we are. And absolutely ready to be proven otherwise if you have thoughts. But it's so funny because it's like, okay, we try to make this an escapist little fantasy where people can come to indulge in celebrity and all these things that are, you know, treated as silly and not important in the grand scheme of things. But yet here we are with a future president on the cover of Playboy, no less.
We always over-index on intellectualizing pop culture or coming at pop culture from like an anthropological perspective. It's only right that we come to the political intellectual landscape from a pop culture perspective, which is kind of what we're doing here.
Exactly.
I mean, this is Playboy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're two entertainment writers talking about an entertainment profile on the 47th president-elect, Donald Trump.
How are you feeling as a non-voter?
I mean, it does feel ironic to pay taxes to this great country and not be able to have a say. I first moved to the U.S. a week after Donald Trump got elected the first time around. I was 22. And I just turned 30 last week and he has been elected for the second time. I'm just so much older and nothing has changed, but everything has. It's really weird. And I was like pink pussy hat on in New York City, marching the streets, angry.
Yeah.
You know, like really like taking up arms that first time around. And also looking back, sorry, this is a full retrospective now, but I was really in like, that was my peak kind of media era, was probably the first like 3 years in this country. And that also happened to coincide with the rise of Me Too and cancel culture. And I was so on the pulse with, I mean, just leftism, writing articles left and right that were really coming for the throats of many men and women for any kind of like misstep or faux pas. And it just feels really strange and crazy and also like poetic justice in a way that the pendulum has swung so far in the opposite direction and we're living to see it. And I also think as you get older, you soften and you are far more open to listening and seeing the other side. And it is just so interesting to see how, to see a manifestation of just like how the other side got radicalized by kind of me taking on the entire responsibility. Yeah, but like,
but you did it.
Yeah, it was me. By the media and our culture collectively at that point in time, how radicalized this other side became off the back of that first run.
I know. No, it is. And I mean, journalism has played such a role in the story.
I mean, he's suing CBS right now.
Yeah.
His first act as president-elect is suing the media.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, we stay top of mind for Mr. Trump. Also, that we have a personal connection, you sharing the name of his ex-wife.
Yeah, I know.
Ivana. And me sharing a birthday with Ms. Ivanka.
Oh my God. They are us and we are them.
Happy birthday to her, can I just say.
Good God.
What a birthday present.
Yeah. I could not vote in the 2016 election. I became a citizen like a couple weeks after.
Oh.
So I remember that my big call to arms at that point was like, vote because I can't. Fuckers.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you were posting.
Yeah.
You were posting?
Oh, I was on the streets. I was registering people to vote. I was like the people with the clipboards. Like,
wow.
Please, please, please register to vote because I cannot. Mm-hmm. I beg you. And I got a lot of people registered, honestly. So I'm happy about
you
that.
You were blonde. You were cute.
You are still
cute. Yeah. Just brunette. But there was a lot going for you back then.
Oh my God. Yeah. Well, that was pre-blonde. That was college.
Oh, you were brunette.
I was brunette. I was just a little brunette in Chicago.
Doc Martens.
Yeah, exactly.
No jacket
needed. Smoking cigarettes. Sorry if that's a shock to anyone listening.
Sue me.
And coming from a city like Chicago at that point, it was like very electric, very like grassroots activism, very like lean on your community, very, you know, which I feel like has been a lot of the discourse now. Like, we all just need to take care of each other if our government won't, like, you know.
So when Clinton,
community care.
So when Clinton didn't get elected in 2016, where were you and what was the sentiment?
Oh my God. Let me tell you where I was. I don't know if I've shared this story publicly before.
You haven't.
And I think a lot of people are walking around right now feeling humiliated, rightfully so in some ways. But this was abject humiliation that I experienced the day after the 2016 election. I remember watching it, and I remember when it became clear that, oh my God, she's not coming out. Like, she's not winning the swing states. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And I was interning at that point at a local news station in Chicago. So I went in, my shift started at 5 a.m. So I went in, took the bus like an hour to get there because it was like outside of the city a bit. And I arrived and we had booked all these speakers that were going to speak about the first woman president and all of these things. And it was like very like local Chicago news. And there were all these time slots that were suddenly needed to be filled by someone. By they're desperately calling anyone to come in to figure out what we can do. Anchors are on live at 5 a.m. Like, it's like we are flying by the seat of our pants.
Because there's no expert that was right.
Like, people had been booked for
specifically to speak to female empowerment.
And like yet, Hillary Clinton's campaign and the first steps when she reaches office. So they were like, we have this 2-minute time slot that like we have not been able to successfully fill.
Yeah.
Ivana, you are going to get into a little robot costume and you are going to dance for national morale. And they put me on camera in a hallway in our like studio space. Me doing the wave, the worm, jumping up and down, crumping, live on camera. I also, my face was so puffy from the night before because I had been crying. And I danced for 2 minutes on national television. And it was horrific.
Original wild robot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And that's what I did. That's what I did. Me and another intern who was in a monkey costume. And it was like me, robot, him, monkey. And we were just like breaking it down together.
Does that footage exist?
I have found it. And it is somewhere in a lost archive. If I find it again, I will post it to the page.
Please.
It's high time that I come out. It's high time that I tell the truth for once.
This is right on par with Chris Evans attempting to shake your hand and you just swerving him.
There's some harrowing footage out there.
Yeah.
And I won't deny that. I won't deny that. But that was where I was. And my headspace, I mean, you know. And then after that, I moved to New York and started working in magazines.
You left it all behind.
I left it all behind. Yeah. So it just feels really like a Groundhog Day in some way because there was so much dialogue after of like, we have to learn. We've learned a horrible lesson as the media of how we cover these men and these like radical politicians, and we can't platform them. And
yeah,
but
doesn't it feel so crazy, not to take us on a tangent, but that the Democrats not once but twice just gave us a VP and said, here you go.
Yeah.
That's what about the second choice? Take it.
They were not great candidates. No. Let's be honest.
In either case.
They, not much of a, I don't know, inspiring platform to speak of.
A woman who's, I mean, face it, never bumped that once.
No, she's a prosecutor.
We did say it. We said it a long time ago.
Yeah. Kamala is brat. Was a lie.
It was always a lie. Yeah, I know.
And try as she might, it just shocked me the amount of people that are talking about how she ran a flawless campaign.
I know. Can we just say this up top? I need to get this out before we dive into just like the full Trumpian narrative. The rhetoric that's going on right now of America hates women and that is why America has chosen a man over a woman like twice. I disagree with that in relation to the election specifically.
It just simplifies it to the dumbest common denominator.
It's totally reductive. I think in both cases, the female candidates were not the right choice. I mean, anyone's better than Donald Trump, of course. But I just think that they weren't going to carry, not like an Obama. We've been so apolitical on this goddamn podcast. So now we're standing for something. I'm an immigrant, so I can really say whatever the fuck I want. I might get deported. Who knows? But I'm seeing a lot of pages that I follow who for sure have a majority female demographic post like sexist, misogynistic, like troll people like Nick Fuentes, like people who are just like so far, far off the edge right wing being like, your body, my choice, bitch. Like, surprise, like that kind of stuff. And then, of course, this is just inciting the 4B movement, which is like women fully radicalizing and retreating away from men entirely.
Which is, we've co-opted in the same unhelpful way that we did the black squares, where it's like, right, they're like taking a little bit of something and then posting a TikTok about like, join me on the 4B movement. And it's like, have you read anything? Like, South Korea was far more thoughtful when they thought of it. Like, there's actually quite a lot going on there. Like, don't just post the black square. You sound ridiculous.
There's a birth rate situation. Yeah. Like, very considered.
Yeah.
And like, this concept of today we cry, women, like tomorrow we rise, tomorrow we fight. I think I'm just really struggling with it because I think that this is a time for connection and coming together, and for sure it's emotional labor that we shouldn't have to do, and it's unfortunate that we have to do, but it's the only way we're going to move forward. There are men that obviously a lot of them are involuntarily celibate and are struggling to connect with women, and the Me Too movement has also made that really, really hard. Men don't know how to engage with women in a way that is going to make women feel safe. And that has meant that like the worst, most problematic men are the ones that are like making moves on women, which has led women to be like, there are no good men left because the only men that are approaching them are the most like dumb fuckwits.
Yeah.
It's like a vicious cycle. But I think like it's actually time for women to like lead with empathy in the face of flagrant misogyny and sexism, even though it fucking sucks. Like, we can acknowledge it sucks. Don't go down the rabbit hole of looking at someone like fucking bleep it, Nick Fuentes, and like feeling a type of way when they say like you're pressing your face against the fucking brick wall ceiling. None of that is fucking real. It's a question of like empathy and connection and engagement and community and like really not retreating into our own silos. And I know I'm on my soapbox on another level. I've like never gotten this passionate on a podcast ever. But the idea of not being able to like sit down and engage with people who aren't like you, so frustrating to me. And I think it's so counterintuitive and counterproductive. And instead of like raging, I think we need to like actually lead with kindness.
And that doesn't always look like tacitly laying down and accepting what's happened.
No,
like,
not at all. It's not Handmaid's Tale fucking like, take me, Papa. Yeah,
exactly.
It's not that. It's having a conversation that may be uncomfortable and like being measured, you know? And it's like, and if that gets to a point where you cannot continue on, walk away. Totally.
Yeah.
But like, it doesn't need to be fuck all men, you know, men are the worst, like these sweeping generalizations, you know, that only push men further into their little holes.
Yeah. They're sad little holes. It is useless to rely on empire to support us. It doesn't love us. Like, we can really only rely on each other in that way and the connections we've built and the communities that hold us up.
Well, the country's too fucking big.
And the government's too far gone.
Corrupt.
Too far gone.
Yeah.
It's not going, it doesn't care about our well-being in the way that, like, you care about someone you love's well-being.
Yeah.
And I think that there are all these platitudes of, like, you know, America loves us. America's a place for all. America, like, yeah,
freedom.
Yeah, freedom and home of the brave and whatever it might be. But for anyone that's been politically engaged, it's, like, broken our hearts too many times.
Yeah.
And I concur about the engaging with things that only make you mad. It's like, it's not productive. But of course I've done that this week. Of course I've scrolled through everything and read all the most horrible people and their take and what they're going to do and the rights they're going to take away and how excited they are to do it. And it's addicting to go down that little spiral of, like, oh my God. But
yeah. And it's so addicting to feel reactive.
Yeah.
To, like, have that response within yourself.
Yeah.
But it's not, it's just actually, I can't emphasize this enough. It's not productive. I will say one thing. Like, I am from one of the most, like, famously liberal countries on the planet. We're the only country that signed a treaty with our indigenous population. We're the first country to give the women the vote. And even my country has massive dissonance and is absolutely right-leaning at this point in time. That it's a global perspective shift.
Yeah.
America sets the tone.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
I know. And I honestly feel like I do. Where I felt most lonely are the people that are like, if Kamala was elected, everything would be perfect. And it's like, you are not looking around, mama. That is not how that works, unfortunately. There are obviously, like, better options and worse options, but it just feels deeply lonely to think that all bets are off now and, like, there's nothing to be done and it's all over and we're about to, like, disintegrate. And I mean, Trump has always had a message. He's been clear as day for what his vision for the country is. And it's one that I don't agree with. It's one that you don't agree with. But it is one that's resonated with the hearts and minds of many, many, many people in this country. And in that way, it's worth at least looking at, because he's been consistent.
Far before his political career, he was consistent.
He was consistent. And he is, like, an absolutely ridiculous person. It is easy to laugh with him. I don't know if you've heard all of his speeches recently, but, like, he's coming for the actors. It is intoxicating to watch him because it is so nonsensical and so ridiculous. But he has the copy, and that's something that,
well, he goes off teleprompter a lot, as far as I can understand.
Oh my God.
Which, I mean, it's really interesting, not to jump ahead to this piece, but a little kind of insight is the writer says that he really stays on message. A lot of his answers are rehearsed. Yeah. And this writer specifically spent 16 weeks with him and says only over that course of time does he get some kind of genuine, fresh takes. It's funny to think about that now, considering he seems so off the cuff.
Yes, yes.
Just riffing.
Just riffing at all times. Something that Kamala would never do. There was no riffing.
No. She was playing a new game according to the old rules.
Yes, that's exactly it. It's just like, people do require you these days to take a stand. And, like, Democrats refuse to. No one talking about climate change. No one talking about the genocide in Gaza. Like, nobody refusing to discuss any
to hardline
of
on
the
anything.
Biggest issues that are affecting, like, our world, the biggest issues that matter to voters today. Like, they are too afraid to take a stand for anything.
Couldn't hardline on anything.
No.
Fundamentally, it's two copywriters sitting here.
I know.
Looking each other in the eye saying, no one could write a three-word fucking slogan.
Yeah.
It's, yes, we can. It's make America great again. It's take America back. I mean, it's three or four words, and that captures the imagination of millions.
Yeah, it does. So, and I've seen quite a few MAGA hats around town.
In Los Angeles?
Yes. I saw people driving around in, like, F-150s with Trump flags billowing behind.
Whoa, dude.
Which, where, I mean, where, a lot.
Which part of town?
West Hollywood.
Yeah. I mean, I think the gays.
Gays for Trump. I mean, there's so much to talk about. As I said when we sat down, this could be a 4-hour episode where we get into celebrity endorsements of presidential candidates, like something that's come up a lot this election, where we get into...
Did you see Nicole Scherzinger?
No. What?
Nicole Scherzinger replied to Russell Brand's photo of him wearing a MAGA hat and said, "Where can I get one?"
Oh my God.
Either on X or on Instagram, I can't remember. And someone like tweeted, "Fastest way to lose a Tony."
Ooh.
Like to just like go on Amazon, like to just like maybe just a quick Google incognito. Oh, I mean,
yeah,
it's the Addison Rae of it all. I mean, you sent me a resurface video of Addison, what, at a UFC fight, was that? Or was it a...
Something where she went up to President Trump and was like, "Hey, just had to introduce myself.
I'm Addison.
It's so, so nice to meet you."
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't think that we would be shocked by the political leanings of millionaires and billionaires. It's sort of like, it's not good. It's definitely not. It's not, you won't be happy to hear how they feel about the world.
No, even if they're publicly endorsing
the
Democrats.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of smoke and mirrors probably going on there.
The ballot booths are famously private. So we don't know. We don't know. We don't claim to know. But yeah.
Wouldn't that be so diabolical if, like, I don't know.
Taylor Swift
is voting for Trump. Wouldn't it just be so...
Would you be shocked?
Like, I wouldn't be shocked. It would be crazy.
Yeah. That one would be shocking. We leak her ballot.
My God. Imagine the...
Imagine.
The money you could get for that.
For leaking a ballot, I know.
But this takes us all the way back, what, 35 years ago? 1990?
Yeah. 1990. Where our writer, Glenn Plaskin, spent 16 weeks with Trump for this Playboy interview. An unprecedented amount of time.
Imagine. 4 months.
Yeah.
365 pie girl. Don't eat, don't sleep. Don't eat,
don't sleep. I'm getting confused with like car, a bus, to another car.
No, wait. Bus. Don't eat, don't sleep. Keep doing a repeat. Keep bumping that.
Yeah, there it is. You found it.
16 weeks on with Trump to keep bumping that.
Yeah, you always find it. Thanks. You always find it in the end.
God.
Glenn, our author here, let me just give a little... bit about him. He's a celebrity interviewer, a columnist. He's written like 25 New York Times bestsellers, and his big area of the world is ghostwriting celebrity memoirs.
That's hot. That's so cool.
It's my dream. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know what he knew now. I don't know how he could have possibly.
Where are you, Glenn?
I know. Because the questions he asks are fascinating.
Fabulous is what I was going to say.
I cannot say that I would have asked these same questions.
Absolutely not. He's a genius.
Yeah, he's a genius. And I think I would have... I think many people, and this was sort of the, you know, the 2016 knife in the rib, which was like, nobody took him seriously. And I think for most of his life, nobody's taken him seriously.
Can I just say one of my favorite questions?
Yeah.
It's literally like... Are people jealous of you?
Yeah, I know.
That's so funny.
He is asking what people want to hear.
Do you think they're jealous?
Do you think they're jealous? Do you love having so much money?
Are you a greedy little cunt?
Yeah. Verbatim. Literally. So 1990, huge year for pop culture. Madonna's Vogue, MC Hammer's You Can't Touch This.
Crazy.
New Kids on the Block are running around the block. Home Alone comes out. Goodfellas comes out. Godfather comes out.
Whoa.
We're sort of in like a gangster era in film. Everyone is obsessed with this idea.
Wait,
like,
that isn't organized that interesting crime. Because of like excess? Yes. Money and excess.
Oh, 100%. We are in the... economically bountiful 90s.
And it was just after the crash.
Yeah, exactly. Which Donald Trump avoided, of course, somehow managed to not be affected by that in any way.
He always manages to just
scoot on through.
Just by the tip of his ear.
Yeah.
Just narrowly avoid the bullet end. Whizzing by.
Yeah.
Woo!
So true.
I mean, who else is making this fun?
Nobody. You know? Nobody. That's true. The World Wide Web. WWW. Here we are. The internet is coming.
Wait, are you serious? In 1990?
1990.
Oh.
Yeah. The internet was introduced to the public in 1990.
Oh, huge. Okay.
Huge. It wouldn't be widespread for another few years. This was like the true beginning of the internet was in 1990. And then what came, of course, a digital revolution. And, you know, now here we all are writing on the Zoe Report. So it's the end of the Cold War as well. The collapse of the Soviet Union begins in 1990.
You're going from the Zoe Report to the collapse of the Soviet Union?
That's why we're here. That's why we're here. We can hold two truths at the same time, can't we?
It's all connected.
It's all connected. And it is. You'll find that, yeah, Mikhail Gorbachev, yeah, it was him, then Rachel Zoe.
Dressing Anne
Hathaway. No,
no,
of course.
And an Oscar de la Renta red gown at the 2009 Oscars. If you look close enough.
It's all there. It's all there. What was the color of the Soviet Union? No. Rachel Zoe wasn't a part of the collapse of the Soviet Union.
Her clutch is just a, what's it called?
Not a Molotov cocktail. What are you saying?
No. What's the Soviet Union?
Oh, the sickle.
Her clutch is a scythe and sickle.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was a really intense time politically. The fall of the Berlin Wall was 1989. Mm. So we were like a year out. It technically marked the end of like the German divisions that had been there since the end of World War II.
I feel like millennials, like the older side of millennial, like Kim K, born in 1980, which I think was the first year, have lived through a lot.
A lot. A lot. My heart goes out to them. No. They really have seen some history of like, here's another historical event happening before you. Of course, starting a war, as they love to do. Yeah.
What is this? The Gulf War?
Yeah, Persian Gulf War. Yeah. Yep. Nelson Mandela is released and an end to apartheid in South Africa.
You know, my dad read me that book. Took a year.
Oh my God.
A Long Walk to Freedom.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I will never forget the lesson that he was like a really bad, like, oh, I shouldn't say really bad. He wasn't a great father and husband.
Yeah.
And Dad told me that like sacrifices are made to be great in one area of life. That's you have to true. Fail in another.
That is true.
Did that stay with me?
Yeah, of course. Powerful, powerful book.
You could never have it all.
That's so true. Eastern Europe also, 90s. We're not particularly kind to Yugoslavia.
No.
So this was a brutal time there. And I am also getting into this because, yeah, we're usually not talking about the fall of the Soviet Union. But of course, Trump is asked on his thoughts about Gorbachev and like how he thinks he is as a leader of Russia and how he would do things differently, which is so eerie considering Trump's obsession with Putin and how much the Russian scandal influenced
his
rise.
His wife, Ivana, is she Russian? I'm forgetting.
I don't think so. I think that she is Czech.
His obsession, though, with Eastern European women.
Yeah.
I mean,
goes deep.
I pray you never meet him. He might just snap you up.
No, I think I'm unsnappable at this time. I'll simply tell him, sir, die. Which he might, because he's so fucking old.
Yeah.
He is the oldest president that we've ever had.
Is he 82, dude?
He is. He's 78. But he will turn 80 in office.
Right.
Yeah. So.
I know. The sunbeds also, they age you quick. He's kind of a walking advertisement for SBF.
Yeah. And let me just give you a little bit of backstory on him. We'll get into it because it does come up in the profile. But just to give you a sense for anyone that's out there being like, how did this happen? The Apprentice. He was in an episode of Sex and the City. Like, how did this happen? Mm-hmm. He was born in 1946. He grew up in New York. His father, Fred Trump, was extremely, extremely successful in real estate. He built and managed affordable housing in Brooklyn and Queens and does not have a track record for being a good man, kind man, an ethical man when it came to managing lower middle class families and their needs.
No, and famously, or I think has come out in the many biographies of Trump, not a very kind father.
No. Also, have you seen him?
No, I have never seen him.
Oh my God, when I show you a photo of this man, I can't wait to show you because he looks like a...
He's an Uggo?
Cartoon villain.
Not to offend the Uggos, oh my God.
No, but... Well, this was him.
Oh, good God. Yeah, no, he is what Disney referenced.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's Jafar.
I mean, evil ages you. It does. You can't get away with it for very long. So yeah, that was his father. He did very, very well. And Donald Trump sort of followed in his shoes. He was like the only kid that was like, I'm going to be a real estate mogul just like Papa. Mm. And he was. He got a $1 million loan from his daddy. And that's sort of what started him off in his career. That's like sort of how it all began, is he got this gift.
Chunk of change.
And then he was able to build like huge projects in Manhattan. He purchased the old Commodore Hotel, which became the Grand Hyatt in 1976. And then came Trump Tower. Then came so many hotels, apartment complexes, huge things.
To like adjust for inflation with that. I mean,
oh, like
unfathomable amount of money in 1978.
Yeah. Also unfathomable for most people, I think, the idea of like, I have an idea, so I will just turn to my family to lend me more money than I could ever imagine to make it happen. So
us with the podcast is exactly what we did.
Exactly. I called my dad and I said, do you have $30? That is what I need to get two pumpkin spice lattes and a croissant for us to share on day one of recording.
Necessary fuel.
And it kicked us off, didn't it? Necessary fuel. You have to feed the beast. So his career then at that point, he leaned hard into finance. He leaned hard into real estate. That's always been where his money was. And then in the 1980s, so like before this profile, he leaned hard into his public image. He was like, I'm a rich man. I'm a wealthy man. And he was out on the town.
Yeah. Well, what becomes very clear from the outset with his profile is that he's kind of all about image. Image is actually what drives him.
Yes.
So it's not business savvy that seems to be like pulling the strings on his career. It's actually like, what has the biggest name? What carries the most clout? That is what I'm going to go after. So like right now he's pursuing American Airlines, for example. He's just bought the Plaza Hotel. He wants the Waldorf Astoria. Anything that has like a historic or kind of or cool, he is going to just like put his entire back into.
He wants glitz. He wants glamour.
He wants glitz and glamour.
So different than his family business of low income housing.
And that's why
sexy.
He got the fuck away from it.
And he said, no. It has to be luxury real estate, huge, dramatic, literally gold.
Yeah.
Literally gold
at
all times.
In every single industry. I think, what does he want? Like to buy the New York Post?
Yeah. Like, he wants it all.
Yeah. It's like the coolest thing of every industry. It's like, if I was to be like, okay, I want to get in the restaurant business, let me start with Carbone.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. I'll just buy that up and then I'll make my way. Okay.
And then Coca-Cola.
Yeah. And then came The Apprentice, and then came the presidential election. So we're gonna fast forward. We can't possibly go through all the 2010s, but I will say that he has been embroiled in an unbelievable amount of scandals, all of which, you know, people assumed would take him out of the running. He's been indicted and settled on pretty much all of them. Like, he did do them, and that goes from sexual assault to fraud, all the classic.
And I just want to clarify something I said earlier.
Yeah.
When I said Kamala and Hillary weren't the best candidates, anyone is better than Trump.
Yeah.
Anyone is better than Trump. This is fundamentally a criminal and an abuser.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It was just that if you wanted to throw all your weight behind someone, there could have been a different choice. That is what I was...
Yeah, and I also think, like, I will proudly stand and say that none of those women are my idols.
You don't aspire
aspire to be more like them. I, you know, and that's just what it is to be a political person. It's that, you know, most likely the people that we have elected when they leave office are at that point war criminals in one way or another. Mm-hmm. And so to idolize them feels like just a waste of our time.
Do you know a quote I heard on Real Housewives yesterday was, it's harder to thread a camel through a needle than for a rich man to get into heaven.
Yeah.
And I thought, my God, that's profound from the woman of Salt Lake City.
They can drop it occasionally, really, in a way that shocks you to your core. I love those women. I aspire to be like them. At least they're honest.
I mean,
except for
the ones that have been indicted.
Except for the ones that
fraud. Yeah.
Except for those ones. So let's get into the profile. Donald Trump sits alone. He hasn't slept in 48 hours. At 6 a.m., perched high in the bronze-coated jewel of his empire, Trump Tower, he's bent over a mammoth Brazilian rosewood desk, scrutinizing spreadsheets. No insomnia, no gnawing worries. Pressure, he surmises, sipping an iced Coke. Doesn't upset my sleep. A standard 4 hours nightly. I like throwing balls into the air, and I dream like a baby, he says.
3 hours later, blonde hair marshaled, he announces, with standard chutzpah, his $7.5 billion bid to gobble down the nation's premier airline, American. On the strength of his $120 a share bid, the stock vaults from $16 to $99. The 43-year-old billionaire, who owns a huge block of American Airlines stock, smiles broadly. A week later, with the market tumbling 190 points, he withdraws his offer, perhaps temporarily.
Despite some reports that insinuated his American Airlines raid was only cardboard, a ploy to rattle up his stock, Trump stares into space. Nope, I want it. Yup.
Yup.
If it's the best and it's for sale, Donald Trump's stomach begins to growl. That line.
I know.
That line.
Yeah. It is harrowing.
And this is the best part. Not often do we get hard numbers in a profile.
Hard numbers.
And you want to know why we get hard numbers? Because he's so arrogant. So let's run the numbers.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Yep.
So he bought a onyx and gold plated yacht from a Saudi financier for $29 million, and it's now worth $100 million. He bought the Eastern Shuttle for $365 million. He bought the Plaza Hotel for $400 million, lovingly restoring it.
And he's put his wife in charge.
Yeah.
Ivana is in charge of the Plaza Hotel. She's a former Olympic skier and now model.
Qualified.
She presides over Trump Tower.
Yeah, she says it has better closet space. They have a 727 jet and a French-made military Puma helicopter. They have a boat, the Trump Princess, which is worth $175 million. Stop me at any point if this is too much. He just recently sold a casino, right?
Mm-hmm.
Casino in Atlantic City to another financier who bought it for $365 million. Trump had only paid $101 million the year before. It really just keeps going. Yeah. Like there's...
And then he says, I've got to have the Waldorf. I can't sleep without it.
It's so nuts to get figures like this.
The numbers, when they are all put together like this, really lose their meaning. This is... Money
to see so many zeros.
Yeah.
Like it's hard for me to pronounce.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it sort of sounds silly. This is money that most of the people on earth will never see, will never dabble in, will never look upon, will never experience.
Well, it totally changes the meaning of money altogether. Money totally becomes an idea. And I think even when Democrats came after Trump for his bankruptcies are totally irrelevant when you're dealing with this amount of money.
He's not embarrassed.
No, that's just another chip to play in business.
Yeah,
that's another play.
Yeah,
it's a high stakes poker game.
Yeah,
and sometimes you're gonna like leave it all out there and then you're gonna bounce all the way back.
And he knows the game. I mean, which is also by virtue of those that were born into money, you get to learn things, how inheritance works, how trust funds work. You learn that there's a completely different set of rules for people that were born into money that they learn very early on.
Right.
And in that way, it's just operating on a totally different plane.
That is so true. You know, I've had one rich friend. It is actually a different playing field.
Yeah.
Just the setup is so different. He was given stocks and bonds for his, you know, 13th birthday. It's like he bought Apple stock when he was 13 years old, something like that. It's like so different the way that they're thinking, the way that they're moving.
I know.
I didn't have a fucking savings account until I was 25.
No. And I had a friend who was like a paralegal and wrote her like specialty was trusts and inheritance documents. And it's just like what it looks like is like, okay, so they'll be granted $200,000 on their 18th birthday. When they get married, they get $500,000. Yeah. When they buy their first house, that will be covered completely, plus another like $800,000 to get them settled. And it's just an unbelievable sum. $100,000 for the first kid, $200,000 for the second kid. Just like money appears when you need it most.
Yeah.
Which is not the way that most people are living in this country, unfortunately. But he is. And he is living it up. He's not, I would say, beloved. The outgoing mayor of New York called him the most arrogant son of a bitch that has ever stepped onto the earth.
Mm.
He's not worried about that. He sort of like goes through his life really enjoying his wealth and working very hard. Certainly, he sleeps 4 hours a night. So he's doing what he can.
But I do believe that a lot is handled for him. He has an incredible executive assistant named Norma.
There's always a Norma.
There's always a Norma. We are getting a real inside look here because Glenn, as we said before, spent 16 weeks with him. And a lot of this time was spent like sitting in his office, watching him take calls, like seeing him in his day to day, seeing him and getting him as he really is.
It's crazy access. And it also speaks to the power of Playboy that he gave Playboy this much access.
Yeah.
I mean, he's clearly shared with them how much cash he has, which, by the way, is $900 million. Sorry, just had to double check that.
Yeah.
And his assets total at $3.7 billion.
Jesus Lord.
Yeah. So with regards to all of this, all of his success at this point, he says, vision is my best asset. I know what sells and I know what people want.
He does.
That just does seem to be his unique talent. And like, I even think about that with how he has managed to shimmy onto new media, like the way that he's harnessed traditional media and new media and straddled both worlds really well.
Yeah.
I mean, that is really like something to behold. The man was like kicked off Twitter and then like reinstated by now, like one of his biggest fans.
I am so curious to see when the Elon Trump fallout happens because you know it's going to happen. Them with Bezos. Oh God, it's all just that little tripod of terrifying men with horrible hair.
Is Bezos a vocal Trump supporter?
Yes. Well, just like congratulations. And the Washington Post staff.
Trump getting elected is a terrible thing for Jeff Bezos with the China tariffs. That's the worst thing that could happen to Amazon. It's going to like plunge them into debt. The company's going to lose so much money.
Oh, for sure.
Like every American company will.
Yeah.
Who's manufacturing in China.
Mm-hmm. Which most all of them are.
But there is like a take in here in this intro.
I know. That is terrifying.
And telling. Yes.
Glenn talks about sort of like, you know, as these weeks, the many weeks they spent together passed by, he found that he liked asking him about some of these like more hot button topics. Often he parried with rehearsed answers, but we spent enough time together that we entered genuinely fresh territory. When I asked for his stance on abortion, he frowned, pouted, and asked me to turn the recorder off. He didn't really have an opinion. It was a very human moment.
This is the thing. Anything kind of inflammatory that he's globbed onto has just been campaign strategy. No. He doesn't really care about abortion. He doesn't really care about gay rights. I mean, trans rights, maybe. Mm-hmm. But all the other stuff, it's just to rile up the Christian nationalists, to get these people on his side.
Yeah, the evangelical vote.
Yeah. He doesn't care. You think he hasn't paid for 100+ abortions in his time?
Oh my God.
The man was probably had a fucking train going to the clinic.
That he hasn't like in his many, many years in New York in the 90s had the most fun nights out with queer people.
Come on. His best friends were probably the gays.
I know.
Down at Area.
But this is the thing. It's like politics is not... It's not personal for many of these politicians.
No.
It's just like, this is what works. Like, this is what the Bible says. This is what will sell.
No, and there's no ethics. And I mean, that's what's so funny about like abortion and these topics in America specifically. They've taken certain healthcare issues or like social issues and made them political issues. In New Zealand, where I'm from, abortion isn't a political issue. It's not even a social issue. It's a procedure, like a nose job.
Yeah.
It's a procedure.
Our puritanical beliefs jump out all the time.
Oh, where no,
it's like, oh no. Oh God.
It's genius to find like the little pressure points and just prod and prod and prod.
And it gets the people riled. I have to tell you something.
What?
My dandruff is back in a big way.
No.
I know. I don't know what to do.
Okay. Well, I have something to share with you that may help. Do you remember when my dandruff came back and I tried everything but using a dandruff product? Like I even got those like towel headband things to wash my face because I assumed it was my cleanser. Like I just did everything but go to the source, which is, I gotta say, Noomi's Dandruff Defense. Dude, it is so good. It's light. It's like you leave, your hair is clean, but it doesn't feel weighed down the way that some shampoos and conditioners does. But it also doesn't strip it of its natural oils. I understand that's a lot for it to achieve, but it really pulls it off.
No, and I have heard that to get rid of dandruff, it has to be antibacterial, antifungal. And I know those words obviously don't sound sexy, but the results certainly are.
No, it's incredible. I mean, this dandruff
shampoo and conditioner are packed with amino acids. They enhance shine, protect hair from all environmental stresses, which is so clutch, especially if you live in like a very, very dry environment. You kind of just need, oh, I mean, summer sun, winter cold, you name it. You just kind of need that extra help. And it has just like the formula is amazing. It is lightweight. It doesn't like bog your hair down, but at the same time, it's shiny, voluminous. It is incredible. There's argan and tea tree oil that soothes the scalp. You know, it's scalp first all the way. Everything starts with the scalp.
Everything when I tell you. Okay, how do I get it? I need it.
Okay, you can go straight to numehair.com. That's numehair.com. And if you want a little discount, put the code UNCOVER at checkout. That's UNCOVER, UNCOVER at checkout for 15% off. And honestly, Ivana, while you're there, I know I'm keeping you for so long, but their hair straightener, $100 and incredible. The best one I've ever used. And I've used a lot. As you know, my hair is perpetually straight. I will not live any other way. So I cannot recommend this brand enough. I absolutely love it. And the product itself, Dandruff Defense shampoo and conditioner, dude, you got to get on it immediately.
Okay. It's time to be flake free. I'm ready to go.
NumiHair.com, 15% off with the code UNCOVER. Get on it, baby. Flake free.
This is also a Q&A and it gets pretty granular. There's actually no time for me to cover everything that's discussed here because we're getting into the details of his life, his wealth, what he thinks about himself, where money's going, what his like new venture in Atlantic City is going to be about. There's so much that is covered over the course of the Q&A. Yeah. But the question that I thought is so bold to open with, you know how we talk about like warming someone up?
Yeah.
Glenn asks, here we are at the start of a new decade. How do you respond when people call you ostentatious, ego-ridden, and a greedy symbol of the 80s? Trump responds, rich men are less likely to like me, but the working man likes me because he knows I worked hard and didn't inherit what I've built. Hey, I made it myself. I have a right to do with it what I want. Quick fact check.
Yeah, fact check.
This is like Kylie talking about being a self-made billionaire.
Yeah.
This is like every extremely wealthy person talking about how they did it all themselves. Mm-hmm. We love a bootstraps narrative, but yeah, it's not quite accurate as we've just gone over. You got a $1 million loan from your father and you worked in the business that he worked in. Like, I understand he had an idea. Mm-hmm. Like, what if it was luxury instead? And okay, but it is funny.
What is so interesting about him being voted in again, the bootstraps component is fascinating because clearly he's not a bootstraps politician.
No.
And I don't think we care about that at all. Instead, I feel like America is obsessed with actually an idea of a monarchy.
Yeah.
Someone who inherits their wealth and for that reason is above all of us.
It's aspirational.
No one's like, oh my God, the Kardashians like pulled themselves up from abject poverty. And they're the closest thing we have to royalty in this country.
They wouldn't, I don't think, be as fun to watch.
No.
It would be too real. They'd be worried all the time about losing it all. And they're not worried.
I think they kind of are worried deep down. I think that's what's driving them.
I think they're worried about losing relevance, but I don't think they're ever worried about living on the street.
Right.
Like, you know, so many veterans and other people who've given everything.
Okay, thank you for putting that in context. Yep.
Which leads me to the next question. Glenn asks, with so much poverty on city streets, isn't it embarrassing for you to flaunt your wealth? Trump responds, there's always been a display of wealth and always will be until the depression comes, which it always does. And let me tell you, a display is a good thing. It shows people that you can be successful. It can show you a way of life. Dynasty did it on TV. It's very important that people aspire to be successful. The only way you can do it is if you look at somebody who is.
Yeah, the Dynasty did it on TV part. It really says it all.
He's just an unserious person.
Nah, I think he's so serious. I think he's so serious. He needs attention and he so believes in the power of media. That's why he takes it so seriously. To give this much credence to a soap opera about like rich people doing terrible things to each other. He's just obsessed with the concept of being seen.
Well, he's just been like zombie part put together by pop culture.
Yeah, he has.
Like, that's like how he built everything. And now is fake tanning himself, trying everything he can to be relevant. And I mean, is more relevant. Like, is objectively funnier than all other candidates. Like, because of his obsession with just like talking about what's going on. Like, yeah. He's like, I'm just going to say it how it is. Like, here's what I think's in the zeitgeist.
Yeah.
That's I just like really want to know where that came from, in the sense of like how he grew up or how he interacted with his parents. Where does this obsession with needing attention like come from? Like, that's why he's fucking suing media.
Yeah.
He's not someone who doesn't care. He believes in being in television. He needs to be on camera. He needs to be seen.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
There's so much insecurity just like woven in every answer.
Yes. Glenn asks, what attracts you to all this glitz? And he was like, I love glitzy casinos because people expect it. He's like, I'm not trying to build a lobby of an IBM office building. He puts flash a level below glitz, which I think is accurate.
Yeah. I thought this was like a really accurate summation of like the levels of ostentation.
Glenn asks if he feels guilty about all of his wealth. He's like, Calvin Klein doesn't have a fraction of your wealth, and talks about how he feels so guilty. Do you feel guilty? And he's like, it's not overriding, but I do have it.
And Glenn says, you don't sound guilty at all.
Yeah.
And Trump goes, I do have a feeling of guilt. I'm living well and I like it. Many other people don't live particularly well. I do have a social consciousness. I'm setting up a foundation. I give a lot of money away. And I think people respect that. This comes up a lot. The fact that he gives so much money away. It's like he doesn't think or doesn't know that we know that that's a write-off on taxes.
Yeah.
It's the truly thinking the reader is so fucking dumb.
Yeah. It's like, I actually donated to a charity last weekend. So I think...
So I didn't have to pay all that pesky tax.
I know. And so that's kind of... where he leaves it. He's like, yeah, but like, I built this and I think people respect that. They'd like it for themselves, wouldn't they? Glenn asks, what satisfaction exactly does he get out of doing a deal? He says, I love the creative process. I do what I do out of pure enjoyment. Hopefully nobody does it better. There's a beauty to making a great deal. It's my canvas and I like painting it. I do believe that he enjoys his work. That's what I can gather from this.
Yeah, it's funny because it's not work, is no. it? It's like moving things around.
Yeah.
Like picking up and putting down. And Glenn asked this question, like, how far are you willing to push adversaries? And that is what it is. It's like confronting the person you don't like through threatening to buy their company. That's literally what it is.
Yeah.
He says, I will demand anything I can get. When you're doing business, you take people to the brink of breaking them without having them break. To the maximum point their heads can handle without breaking them. That's the sign of a good businessman. Someone else would take them 15 steps beyond their breaking point.
Man, he has a lot of enemies, Glenn brings up. He says, you have a lot of enemies in New York. Among them, a group that opposes your building a huge Trump city on the Hudson that will include the world's tallest building. What do you say to them? He says, those people fight for the sake of fighting. I honestly believe that if I proposed an 80-acre park, they would come out and fight me. Selfishly, they like what they have and they don't want to give it to anybody else. We need another Rockefeller Center, especially now that Mitsubishi has bought most of the one that we had.
Yeah, he has a real xenophobia, which comes up in this a lot. And I mean, look, if any Democrat in this recent election read this and put it on the projector and took a little stick and pointed to it, because it's all here. I mean, do you remember how he took out at this point in time, like a full page ad in the New York Times about the Central Park Five?
Yes.
There was a young woman, she was a jogger, who was like raped and murdered in Central Park. And I guess there were a few teenage black kids who were found in the area and arrested and charged for her murder. But in fact, they were falsely accused. Anyway, they got, of course, just drawn up and courted by the press. And Donald Trump specifically took out a full page ad against them. And it's just very clear that he's so pro-American, verges on white nationalism, even on this.
It is no surprise to me that the white nationalists and the racists and the KKK are endorsing him, because...
Yeah, because I thought that maybe like it was all campaign bravado. Like, yeah. That's kind of what I thought, much like the abortion stuff. Like, he's just trying to get them on his side. But I do think there is a lot of him in there.
Yes. Yeah. And even... like on principle, like those are his principled stances, yeah, on things. We get into his dad a little bit. Glenn asked, you've often said that your father made you work as a teenager and taught you the value of a buck. He said, Trump, that his father never made him work. He liked to work during the summers. He doesn't understand teenagers who are like sitting at home and watching TV all day. Glenn pushes further. Still, your father was one tough son of a bitch, wasn't he? And Trump says he was a strong, strict father, a no-nonsense kind of guy, but he didn't hit me. It wasn't necessarily what he said. He ruled by demeanor, not the sword. But he never scared or intimidated me, he adds.
Yeah. What I find really interesting about this part is that he speaks in third person. When Glenn says your father was supposedly a harsh taskmaster, he says, I was always very much accepted by my father. He adored Donald Trump, and I've always known that. It's like he's weird. Yeah, he sees himself outside of himself. He's truly main character syndrome. He's the character in his own life.
Yeah. And then he says, Playboy wouldn't be talking to me today if I weren't a cynic. So I learned that from Fred, his father, and I owe him a lot. He could have ultimately been a happy guy, but things just went an unhappy way.
And this perfectly flows into the next portion, which is Glenn openly addressing his ego.
Yeah.
And Trump is like, well, every successful person I've ever met has a very large ego. And he's like, okay, then what about like the Pope? And Trump goes, absolutely. Nothing wrong with ego. People need ego. Whole nations need ego. I think our country needs more ego because it's being ripped off so badly by our so-called allies. Japan, West Germany, Saudi Arabia, South Korea, etc. They have literally out-egotized this country because they rule the greatest money machine ever assembled and it's sitting on our backs. Their products are better because they have so much subsidy. We Americans are laughed at around the world for losing $150 billion year after year, for defending wealthy nations for nothing, nations that would be wiped off the face of the earth in about 15 minutes if it weren't for us. Our allies are making billions screwing us.
Which, of course, influences his foreign policy of like a help no one, do nothing. Though I'm sure he will fund millions in weapons for Israel, certainly. We'll see how all that goes in the months to come. Everything is personal to him, it feels. He's like, I can't believe Japan's getting its oil from the Persian Gulf and it's relying on ships back home. Like, we're doing so much. Why aren't they paying us?
Glenn is asking him so much about, you know, like other cultures, other countries, their policy, how much they interact with Trump on a financial level, even within his casinos. And it's clear that he's angling for this very question, which is, are you going to go into the political sphere?
I know.
And I know. We finally kind of get there.
Yeah. And he says, he hates seeing this country go to hell. We're laughed at by the rest of the world. In order to bring law and order back into our cities, we need the death penalty and authority given back to the police.
And then Glenn asks, what's the first thing President Trump would do upon entering the Oval Office? Many things, Trump says. A toughness of attitude would prevail. I'd throw a tax on every Mercedes-Benz rolling into this country and on all Japanese products, and we'd have wonderful allies again. Which is exactly what he's doing, but with China.
Glenn asks, do you think George Bush is soft? He says, I like George Bush very much and support him and always will, but I disagree with him when he talks of a kinder, gentler America. I think if this country gets kinder or gentler, it's literally going to cease to exist. I think if we had people from the business community, the Carl Icahns, the Ross Perots, negotiating some of our foreign policy, we'd have some respect around the world.
He really gets into it. He wants the death penalty back, like, yeah. As you mentioned, he thinks about nuclear war, yeah. Often.
Yeah, he says it's the ultimate catastrophe, the biggest problem this world has, and nobody's focusing on the nuts and bolts of it. It's like a sickness. People don't believe they're going to get sick until they do. Nobody wants to talk about it. I believe the greatest of all stupidities is people believing it will never happen because everybody knows how destructive it will be. So nobody uses weapons. What bullshit.
And then Glenn says, how would President Trump handle it? And Trump goes, third person.
I know.
He would believe very strongly in extreme military strength. He wouldn't trust anyone. He wouldn't trust the Russians. He wouldn't trust our allies. He'd have a huge military arsenal, perfect it, understand it. Part of the problem is that we're defending some of the wealthiest countries in the world for nothing. We're being laughed at around the world. He says, I'd do the job as well or better than anyone else.
And so Glenn like clarifies, you categorically don't want to be president. Trump says, I don't want to be president. I'm 100% sure. I changed my mind only if I saw this country continue to go down the tubes.
I mean, it's crazy.
It's crazy. It is
that
crazy.
This came out, you know, 35 years ago and he's already here. Like, it's all written in the stars at this point in time.
Yeah. And he even says that he feels that if he ran, he'd do better as a Democrat than a Republican. And he says that's not because I'd be more liberal, because he's conservative, but the working guy would elect me.
Yeah. So we have to like put some context here. So back in this time, the Democrat represented the middle working class. The Republican was the WASP, college educated citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, that has been completely flipped on its head, mostly credited to political figures like Trump.
Yeah.
But the Republican now is the working class man, and the Democrat is...
I don't know what the Democrat is.
The Democrat on paper is the college educated
white woman. But we blew it, didn't we? White women specifically. It's like 92% of black women voted for Kamala and like 40% of white women did, or whatever it might be. It feels more and more like it's so nebulous now. And there was this real moment of hope with Bernie in like democratic socialism, I think could at that time have been like a way forward, a way to do something different, a way to take stances on hard lines. Like, and then it blew away just like that. Joe Biden swept into the room.
Glenn kind of gets to the nuts and bolts of it here, where he's like, you seem very pleasant and charming during interviews, but you constantly talk about toughness. Is this like an act you put on for us? And Trump says, I think everybody has to have some kind of filtering system. I'm very fair, and I've had the same people working for me for years. Rarely does anybody leave me. If somebody tries to push me around, he's going to pay a price. Those people don't come back for seconds. I don't like being pushed around. That's one of the problems with our country today. This country is being pushed around by everyone.
I study people, and in every negotiation, I weigh how tough I should appear. I can be a killer and a nice guy. You have to be everything. You have to be strong. You have to be sweet. You have to be ruthless. And I don't think any of it can be learned. Either you have it or you don't.
And as you continue to make deals, Glenn says, as you accumulate more and more, there's a central question that arises about Donald Trump. How much is enough?
As long as I enjoy what I'm doing without getting bored or tired, the sky's the limit. And that's where we end.
He said it all.
Yeah, he said it all. He laid it all out there.
We could have seen it all coming.
I know, but I don't know. I think people also only see what they want to see. They only take things seriously they want to take seriously.
I mean, what this taught me is that manifestation is real.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He practically had a vision board.
And he's pretty much moved on all of it at this point.
Everything feels like the thrill of the chase. Like, it's like the name of his book is The Art of the Deal. It's not entrepreneurship. Everything is about the lead up to the win.
Yes.
But once you have it, you're only looking towards the next mountain.
Yeah,
to
exactly.
conquer. I think that's what he contends with when he gets into office. What's the next thing? Like, he needs something else to conquer. And when he lost the 2020 election, retribution and vengeance was such an exciting prospect.
Yeah.
What a thrill
mm-hmm.
to prove everyone wrong and come back again, rise again.
Yeah.
And now he's done it.
Mm-hmm.
But what's next?
Yeah.
What's next? Rewriting the Constitution to get another 4 years, the 4 years that were stolen from him in mm-hmm. 2020. So he is in office longer than any other president.
No, there's really no telling.
I mean, he's totally insatiable in his pursuit of being unique.
Absolutely.
You know, those like memes that's like, rip Lorelai Gilmore, like you would have loved Uber Eats.
Yeah.
Like that kind of stuff. I feel like it's like, rip Donald Trump, like you would have loved being an Instagram influencer. You know, like he would have loved being like a TikTok hot boy.
I know.
Going to events and everyone being like, oh my God, do you see over there? That's Donnie T.
Yeah.
Like if only we had pointed him in that direction.
I know. But instead he's settling into the Oval Office. Instead of just like throwing big parties.
Yeah.
He should be throwing the white parties.
No, he's very Michael Rubin coded. Yeah. And I think he would actually like that lifestyle a whole lot more.
I'm certain of that.
Talking about his cabinet and who he's appointing. It seems that there aren't many cabinet members that he even cares about, like the cabinet positions that he even cares about. Like, it just shows his kind of like overarching disinterest and like lack of ambition that really comes with the role.
Yeah.
outside of, I guess, making America the greatest country that ever was, and in doing so, kind of sinking it.
I know. And it's just so silly, this like idea that we have that this country, I would love for someone to show me where it's working, because it's like our maternal mortality rates, like we don't have paid leave. We are in the dark ages in pretty much most of the ways that it matters. We just are the riches. The rich people pay the least taxes. And in that way, their lives are beyond fabulous. But for most people, they never, that doesn't drip down to them.
No, I mean, he was raised in the trickle-down economics and he's still touting that theory. I mean, I think when you look at the fact that he wants to defer to the states, it just shows how little he's invested in things like reproductive rights.
No, but it was one of his main...
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Promises made, promises kept.
Yeah.
That's
people
a
will roll
great
over.
Copy. I wonder if that was off the dome.
I do wonder how much of it is made up on the spot and how much of it is like really strategized.
He's just dropping bars.
Yeah. The reproductive rights. It's, oh, I can't think about it. The pre Roe v. Wade. So many horrific stories. So many needless deaths that have already like happened in Texas and everywhere. It's just.
Yeah. Women getting turned away from hospitals, yeah, and then dying.
And dying.
Yeah. Living in the dark ages is right. It's unbelievable. Like, it's actually unfathomable.
No.
I had an abortion last year in the state of California, and I was so aware of my zip code throughout and like the ease of the process. And there's a lot of like guilt that like came with that for me.
How
like,
different it. Yeah. How different
and
it is.
So strange to feel political weight in a personal decision.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is the thing, is like, you know, I wouldn't call this the inspiration of the week, but it's like, right now, I think that everyone is entitled to feel the way they're feeling. And I think it's a lot of just like deep disappointment with our system and the way that it's moved. And I don't think that what will save us is the DNC. I think that it will be our fellow man.
I think it'll be grassroots.
Yeah.
But I also like want to flag that when Obama was elected, there was a lot of talk about like a post-racial America, that everything from here on out was going to be like gorgeous and glorious, and how far we have, you know, swung the other way, I think is proof that anything could happen. And at the very least, the first Trump era gave us great art. We pray for that once again.
Oh,
it is, of course, so heavy. I hope understanding this man has kind of like given you a little bit more context as to like who the president is,
yeah,
and where he came from. I think it really helped me actually just process it.
100%.
Yeah.
It was very helpful. It also just like, I really don't think that we couldn't have done a Jennifer Aniston. I just like, I couldn't. And I also just feel, I think it's easy to, I don't know, feel alone and feel if I want to go get entertained, like we can find an avenue to get entertained. But I feel like, you know, I know that our sweet little uggos, our salons have proven that people are like desperate to talk.
Yeah.
And so this felt slightly more genuine than just trying to do like a little nostalgia, old 17 mag something.
Yeah. And for our international listeners who are either laughing at the US or just like frankly confused, I hope this like helps you understand a little bit more.
Yeah.
And then those who are possibly in from marginalized communities in those swing states and are either incredibly frustrated or even voted for Trump, just know that we understand in both capacities. We really do understand. It was such a hard one this time.
Yeah.
The Democrats put everyone in a possible position.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more a case of what people were voting against than what they were voting for.
Yeah.
If we can take away anything, I really want people to know that this is not a case of the majority of one country, 300 million people voting against women. I don't think it's like it's healthy or productive to come from like a standpoint of people hate me, I'm up against the wall, like fists out. I think it's just like leading with light where you can and taking care of yourself. And
it's so hard also when that is the message that so many have gotten, like,
yeah,
black people in this country from the beginning. It's like, what else?
Well, I mean, this country was built on violence and slavery. Like, yeah, it's pretty tough.
Yeah.
But I think that like that is just the common rhetoric. That's the dialogue that's going around. Just like, we chose a man over a woman again. We hate women. And I just don't believe that to be true in this specific case of like, I don't believe we chose a man over a woman and that is what happened here.
No. It does feel very 2016 feminism to me.
It does.
That take.
It was the same.
We're aligned there. It's like very like, we were the witches you couldn't burn. And it's like, actually, that's not helpful right now.
If only you'd watched the Barbie movie.
It'd all be so different.
Well, we love you so much. We hope that this has lifted you up.
Yeah.
Please take care of yourself. We have so much fun stuff happening on the Patreon at the moment.
Yeah.
We are trying celebrity food on camera. Nice. In our new series, We Ate.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that's really goddamn fun.
Yeah. Honestly, nothing sounds better than a big box of donuts. So have some grace for yourself, for your mom, for your uncle, whoever. Day by day, minute by minute.
Love you.
Love you.
Bye. Bye.
Uncover Girl is lovingly crafted by Beatrice Hazelhurst and Ivana Ryder. If you want to get even deeper under the covers with us, you can subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/uncovergirl or follow us on Instagram at uncovergirlpodcast. Rate Uncover Girl, write us a review, and share your favorite episode, Shawn Mendes, Rolling Stone 2018, anyone? And we will be your forever fans. Love you.
Every day when you log into ChumbaCasino.com, the ultimate online social casino, you get a free daily bonus. Imagine if you got daily bonuses in other parts of your life.
I chose French fries over loaded French fries.
I asked Stuart from accounting about his weekend, even though I don't care.
I updated my operating system without having to call tech support.
Collect your free daily bonus at ChumbaCasino.com now. And live the Chumba life.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.